The following is still a pandemic recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like, people stare curious, like, she got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like, yet luxurious, like, carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you see this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head and what we loving on and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, presidential assassinations, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time. It's a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed. Our guest this week is a senator from Massachusetts whose life's work fighting for big structural change to transform the economy and rebuild the middle class are just a couple of the countless reasons why my organization, the Black to the Future Action Fund, endorsed her in last year's presidential primaries. She's also a best-selling author, and her latest book, Persist, is a must read. You must know that I am talking about none other than my good friend and my hero, Senator Elizabeth Warren. How are you, my love?
Well, I am a whole lot better to be here with you. If we're going to talk about faves, I put you right at the top of my list. So,
I will,
you know,
take it.
Tough women who are in the fight to make real change. I love it.
Excellent. So, you know, we started this podcast in the very beginning of the pandemic. And so I've been asking everybody, because we're not quite out of the woods yet, what has your quarantine life been like? And have you developed any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
So, look, I count my blessings every day. I've got my sweetie Bruce and,
yes.
And Bailey, the slobbery golden retriever. And, big part of quarantine for us has been walking.
Yes.
I mean, miles every day.
How many miles have you logged?
So I'm on an average over the past 14 months of a little over 9 miles a day.
That's amazing.
Yep. Yep.
Yo.
And I love it. Listen, I'm, you know, I got glutes now, like you wouldn't believe.
Yes.
But lots of muscle, and it's been wonderful since I walk with Bruce. And actually, I should just say, Bruce and I are Bailey's posse, you know, as we get out and kind of try to follow him around. But it's a chance for us to talk, but it's also just a chance to be outside. And that's been true in all weather. I now own rain pants.
Nice.
Not very fashionable, but it means you keep on walking even when it's raining. So I'm just saying, there's a lot to that. How about you? What have you been doing in this pandemic? Come on, you got to have something good.
Yeah, I've got lots of good things. I've been riding my Peloton. I know, and I am not an exercise person, and I'm certainly not an exercise bike person. And then even more so, I'm not a group exercise person. So this is a big deal for
me. Nonetheless, you've hit all three.
I got a road bike, so I'm also taking it on the road. Yes. And I've been pandemic podcasting. This is a new thing for me, but we've been going strong, putting out episodes every week for the last 60-something weeks now.
Fantastic. That's the way to do it.
I'm excited about that.
You know, it is. It's how we make change.
It is. And
we get out there. You just got to be willing to throw it out there on the line. I think that takes real courage to kind of say, I'm going to carry this all on my shoulders, and I'm just going to do it because I believe that through this kind of conversation, we can actually change some things in this country. I think it's an optimistic thing to do, but I think it's a courageous thing to do. You know, that's right. A lot of airspace to fill.
Yes, yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. So, you know, speaking of new skills, I remember when this whole thing started and people were baking bread for the first time and planting gardens. I learned how to do my own manicures because, you know, I'm flossy like that. Mm-hmm. You know, what about you? What's the scoop on your pandemic skills? Are you learning anything new in this pandemic? And in case we enter into the apocalypse, which I believe we are already in, I just got to know what you're bringing to the table.
So one of my new skills is I've gone deeper into what I drink. And I don't mean late in the evenings. I mean all day long. Because so much time has been from home, I've always been a tea drinker. I can't do coffee. I did a half a cup at a Dunkin' Donuts nearly a dozen years ago, and I'm still trying to work it off. You know, the caffeine shoots straight into me. But flavored teas, you know, teas with vanilla in them, teas. Ooh. And so then I started getting more to it, and you're going to love this. I have it with me right now. I have an iced fake coffee.
What is fake coffee comprised of? Do tell.
Fabulous. So it tastes, I like the taste of coffee. I like the smell of coffee.
Yeah.
But I just can't do the caffeine. I can't even do decaffeinated coffee. I barely can do weak decaffeinated tea. So anyway, somebody sent me as a gift, kind of this, a bunch of tea stuff, and included in it was something called fake coffee. Huh. So I thought, so I read the instructions and you brew it like you can brew tea or coffee, you know, hot water.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It turns out the stuff is really good. And all it has in it is a bunch of herbs. It has chicory and, you know, I don't know, probably tree bark. Who knows what's in it? But I'll tell you this, by the time you get through putting a lot of half and half in it and some silk, it is dang good. So,
I am impressed. Yes. I am impressed. And I'm not going to promise that I'll try it because I need that caffeine. I'm not there yet.
Yep.
But yep. I am going to be in solidarity with you.
Okay.
And thank you for being in solidarity with coffee drinkers around
you
the
bet.
World.
I'm with
still
you.
Rolling
I just
with
can't
us.
See the. I just keep generating my own caffeine. Thank you very much. I just kind of organically do that on my own. So
I love that. Yeah, you don't need caffeine.
I know.
Actually.
Can you imagine me on caffeine?
Actually, no.
Lordy.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
This makes me really happy. I'm glad that you're taking good care.
Yeah.
I mean, and seriously, with like people like you who are our champions, I really just want to like wrap y'all in bubble wrap.
Aw.
I got to ask you, Senator Warren, it's so good to have you. We have all the things to talk about, but I want to start here, which is what in the hell is going on in the United States Senate? Why can we not get legislation of value passed through this body? And what do our listeners need to know about what they can do about it?
Okay, so it's the second half of this question that really matters. Ask me what's going on in the United States Senate, and I just got to say, golly.
Uh-huh.
I just don't even know for sure. These Republicans that it's been this way for a long time. When Donald Trump was president and, you know, you'd ask them in the hallways, the press would, what about the thing he said today? What about this horrible, racist, ugly thing he said? And it was like, moo, I didn't hear it. Well, he might want to moderate his voice a little. And then after he lost, then we suffer an armed insurrection on January 6th. And now you've got a bunch of folks in the Senate on the Republican side who just won't go along with anything. They just don't want to do anything. Right. So here we are saying, I grew up in an America where at least we pretended that we wanted everyone to vote. Now, right. There were a lot of impediments to folks voting, particularly Black people from voting, keeping them from voting.
That's right.
But we decided as a nation, I thought, that we were going to do better than that. And now, in this post-Trump, post-armed insurrection, you've got states around the country saying, hey, we're going to do everything we can with surgical precision to keep African Americans from voting, to keep young people from voting, to keep people with disabilities from voting, to keep people who live on our tribal nations from voting. We're going to keep them from voting for a simple reason. They are more likely to vote for Democrats. Mm-hmm. And when all this comes to light, we can't get a single Republican in the Senate, not one. Don't talk to me about, oh, this moderate Republican or that one. Not a single Republican in the United States Senate who is even willing to have a debate about maybe we ought to pass some federal laws to help protect access to the vote, to get rid of gerrymandering, to reduce the influence of dark money. So understand, that's where we start right now. And I'm deep down worried about what this means. If we don't protect the vote, that means we don't protect the beating heart of our democracy. So that's really scary to me. Having said that, we haven't given up on this. We're staying in this fight. And we're pushing other fights that truly will touch people's lives. We've got this big infrastructure bill. I'm in this fight for universal childcare. All our babies, all our mamas and daddies get access and raise the wages of every child care worker and preschool teacher in America. That's big stuff.
Huge.
It is. And we got one more. And that is turn the heat up under President Biden to cancel $50,000 of student loan debt. He's got the power. And what we got to do is persuade him to just step up and do it. So there's a lot that's really awful, but there's also a lot of opportunity out there. This is the time for people to use their voices, big, loud.
One of the things that I really deeply appreciate about you is your personal story. And in your personal story, you've talked so much about growing up on the edges of and sometimes in the direct tatters of poverty. Now, as a small kid, I could relate. I grew up with a single mother who raised me in the first part of my life with her twin brother, and he would work at night, and my mom worked multiple jobs during the day to make ends meet. You know, my mom clipped coupons like it was her religion. And most of the things.
I know that one. Yep. Remember double coupon days?
Yes, totally. I do remember double coupons. Yep. My mom was serious about that.
That's right. Things you did not buy during the week. Because if you could go on double coupon day, you could get that 35-cent coupon. You could turn that into a 70 cents off. I remember.
Exactly right.
Yep.
And it mattered.
It mattered.
You know, and most of the things I got were secured through like months of saving up like UPC codes. So I think there's a lot of things that people don't understand about poverty. The world is literally shaped differently for people who are poor. Can you help our listeners understand this? I mean, at the Black Futures Lab, we talk a lot about undoing the rules that have been rigged against our communities. And sometimes I wonder if people really think that like rules being rigged is some kind of hyperbole. So can you weigh in here?
I mean,
Is poverty like a matter of a lack of individual achievement or drive? Or are things actually set up this way on purpose?
Let's start with the fact that being poor is hard.
That's right.
I mean, it's a lot of work just to get kind of the basics. So you need help on housing because you can't cover your housing expenses. That's one place you got to go. And when you show up, you find out you don't have the right paperwork, or they're only open from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. or 10 a.m. And you had to take 3 buses to get there. I mean, it's every piece. And the place where people who need help with housing and get that access is not the same place as people who need help putting food on the table and getting access to those programs. It's one of the things that really strikes me about how America has structured the assistance it gives is not only how tight it is, that is, how hard it is to get it, it's just how expensive all the speed bumps are in between, the paperwork you've got to come up with, the 3 different places you have to go. And all of it is designed against this backdrop of you have infinite time and infinite resources to be able to go to these places and infinite knowledge about a complex system. I just think everything about that is wrong. And I think it's wrong on purpose. There's some data that show that people who are entitled to assistance don't get it because they believe it's not there anymore. They believe it just doesn't exist. And why do they believe that? Because our officials, our folks in Washington or in the state legislature, have set it up to make it as non-accessible, as non-public as possible. And yet at same time, for everyone who doesn't need it, we get to pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, yes, we provided a safety net. Oh, yes, it's there. And anyone who doesn't navigate through it, well, then it's on them. And this is the classic blame the victim, right? Just make it hard. And then when people stumble, say, well, your fault.
That's right.
It's ugly. I think one of the ugliest parts is this part about everyone who doesn't encounter that system, just doesn't have to live with it. It doesn't, says, oh no, but there's help out there. And the answer is no, there's not.
That's right. That's right. I appreciate that because I think in a lot of ways, people don't know a thing until they've had to experience it. And actually, in this pandemic, millions more people have had to experience what it means to be on that brink, what it means to be caught in that net. And the truth is, yeah, help is not coming. We have to save ourselves. I got to ask you, Senator, I was doing some research preparing for your illustrious appearance on our little podcast that could. And I read that initially, when you first got into politics, you were registered as a Republican years before you ran for office. Now, we're not going to hold that against you. And in fact, I am going to ask you to talk a little bit more about that because I think it's important. I'm not clear that we even have a Republican Party anymore. We have a political party that has been taken over by extremists and zealots. And certainly the Republican Party of today is not the Republican Party that you registered for, but it does have some of the same characteristics. But here's the facts. There are a lot of people, white Americans in particular, that are intrigued by and seduced by this party and their values. As a white American yourself, I'm wondering if you can reflect on that a little bit. What about that party then enticed you or intrigued you? What made you change your mind? And what can we learn as progressives about race and organizing and movement building from the successes of the Republican Party, both of yesterday and today?
So I appreciate the question, but I have to start by saying I think I was a lot less knowledgeable about politics way back when, at one point, I was registered to vote Republican. So I can vote in the primaries.
Yep.
That I was a mom trying to raise my kids, trying to teach school, trying to do my research. And I don't think I was deeply into politics. I think I was one of those people who said, oh, for me, it's just the person. And, you know, so it was very easy for me to vote for Bill Clinton. It was, you know, very easy for me to vote for Al Gore. And when we moved in the 90s to Massachusetts, and I actually had to fill out a registration form, I said, oh, I got this. By that point, kind of my core awakening around politics had been over bankruptcy law. Mm-hmm. I had taught bankruptcy, taught the economics of families that are in terrible financial shape, families that have done their very best. But as the research I did showed, either a medical problem, a job loss that lasted for a long time, or a death or divorce in the family, those were the principal reasons people went bankrupt. And usually it was 2 out of 3. In other words, hardworking people who got hit by circumstances. And I got involved in trying to make the bankruptcy laws work better for those folks. And the Republicans were trying to squeeze down, keep people from going bankrupt, not by giving them better protection on healthcare for sure, but keep them from going bankrupt by just making it harder to go bankrupt, raising the fees to go bankrupt. This kind of goes back to our earlier argument. Yep. Putting lots and lots of barriers and lots of income restrictions and all kinds of restrictions. And if you go bankrupt, getting less and less help. And I got into this fight and I realized there was not a single Republican, not one, who was there for people who are in trouble. They were there for the banks, for the credit card companies that wanted more chances to collect against these people. And shoot, I'll tell you, there were a bunch of Democrats who were with the Republicans. But if you found anybody on the side of people who were getting crushed by this system, they were Democrats. So filled out my voter registration in the 90s after, like I said, when we moved to Massachusetts, and filled it out as Democrat, got in this fight, and I've been in this fight ever since. Yep. And for me, that's been the heart of it. For all the time since then, I never thought I'd be in politics, certainly never thought I'd run for elective office. But it's this fundamental question about your values. Do you really think that the role of government is there to help giant businesses and somehow that's going to trickle down for everybody else? It's to cut taxes for those giant businesses and cut regulations. And if we do that, those giant businesses won't pollute and they will help us build better schools and roads and bridges. Do you really believe that? Because that's kind of the best case for the Republicans. Or do you really believe we need a government that's on the side of the people? And that means a government that says, yeah, we're going to hold these big businesses accountable. This business of giant corporations that pays zero in taxes? No. Billionaires that pay nothing in taxes? No. And then we're going to take that money and help build the structures that build opportunity for everyone else. Yeah, roads and bridges, but broadband, high-speed broadband for everybody. Childcare, high-quality early childhood education for any of our babies whose mamas want them to be there. Opportunities for young people to be able to complete an education post high school without getting crushed by debt. We make those investments, we build an America of more opportunity. And you've been linking this to the pandemic, and I think you're right to do this. But think about what the pandemic has shown us. We need each other.
Yeah.
I think Americans now more than ever are ready for a government that works again. And that's what the big rescue package was about. That's what this infrastructure package could be about if we get this done and get it done right.
I agree. I mean, look, this wasn't a gotcha question. I'm asking, my parents registered as Republicans at one point. And I remember coming out of college and being like, what are you guys doing? And when I talked to my dad, you know, one of the things he said was, because they were small business owners and, you know, businesses have structures. And so here my parents had this tiny business. in this tiny town, but it was registered as a corporation. And so when mm-hmm. these politicians would come and they would talk about tax cuts for corporations, they were thinking, oh, that means me. But I was explaining to my dad, I said, oh, no, no, no. It's not for you. This is like for big, huge corporations. You're never going to see those tax cuts. Mm-hmm. You don't make enough. You don't pull in enough money for that to ever benefit you. This is for those multinational corporations that are pulling in billions and trillions of dollars. Like, they want to keep their money and they are investing in our politics so that they can keep their money.
Bingo.
And so one of the things I was trying to pull out here was like, I think that so many of us engage in politics around personalities. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, at Black to the Future Action Fund, we were proud to endorse you. And it's because we like you as a person, but that wasn't what we made our decision on. We made our decision based on the policies that you were advocating for. And in fact, not just the policies we presented to you for your opinion and your commitment, but I believe you also sent us back 26 additional pages of more policies that could be done to move our agenda forward. And so for people who are listening, what I want them to take from this is that when you're looking at all of this chaos in our political system, don't look at it from the perspective of, do I like that person or do I not like that person? Dig a little bit deeper into, what are they actually about and how do they think change happens? You just laid out an incredible case for how change should happen and who it should benefit and how. And I hope that people who are listening right now can take that advice from you. What can people do, like you, who were kind of watching this tennis match and going, do I have any way to influence what's going on here? All these conversations are happening around me, about me, without me. How do we make sure that conversations about the rules that organize our lives are happening with us?
Oh, I love this because this is the moment. Look, we all get organized around voting, and I'm all for it. 100%. We need to do that. And again, can I just say it one more time? Thank you, Georgia. Thank you for giving us a majority in the Senate. So we're in a position to be able to do some important things. So we're in a position to be able to confirm people, to head up these agencies and make those agencies work for people. So thank you, thank you, thank you on the voting front. But in between voting times, there is so much that we can and must do. And this is when hearing from people matters to all those elected officials. Hearing that you want to cancel student loan debt, now is the time. Over the next couple of months, next couple of weeks, next couple of hours, the President of the United States could sign a piece of paper and 85% of people with student loan debt could be debt-free, could actually have their student loan debts disappear. Think about that. That would just be life transformative for tens of millions of Americans. We could make these investments right now in this infrastructure package in childcare. Think what a huge difference this would make for mamas and for childcare workers, who, by the way, disproportionately women of color. We invest in those good construction jobs that are mostly held by men. It's time to invest in making those good caregiving jobs for women as well. So how can people do it? They can listen to your podcast.
Yes.
They can follow a few people. You don't have to do a bunch online, but raise your voice. Signing these petitions, you know something? Yep. It actually matters. It does. The politicians hear about it. When people put on these days of action to call your representative or to call your senator, I'm just telling you, I sit in the Senate lunchroom and I hear these guys mention, wow, best one, go to a town hall and ask a question. Call your senator's office and say, where are you on getting student loan debt canceled? Where are you on getting child care through? Call the White House switchboard. This is the moment when you helped us elect a lot of good people. not all, but we got a lot of them through. Mm-hmm. Now, put some wind in their sails. Folks who probably want to go in the right direction, put some wind in their sails. You don't just have to call Republicans, call Democrats. Tell them, move this up on your priority list. Because if we do that, we could make the kind of change that would create opportunities for our kids, for our kids' kids, and for our kids' kids' kids. We could do this. And you know why I sent you those extra 28 plans? It's because I want to partner with you in this.
Let's go. Let's go. Yes. It's on. It's all on. Right. Okay.
Let's do it.
Done deal.
Good.
Done deal. And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one, be putting water on fires that are burning in the ocean. That's right. This week, there was a fire burning in the Gulf of Mexico. Why, you ask? Well, because of a gas leak in an underwater pipeline. Excuse me, this seems less than legit and has begged the question once again of what are we doing to the damn planet? There's nothing normal or desirable about fire on water, especially gas-fueled fire on water that we need to survive. Other things Lady ain't gonna do this week includes a meeting at the White House on voting rights. Without Black voters matter. Now look, folks, before I jump into this, let me just say very clearly that we have got to get it together on this. And my comments here are not meant to disparage in any way the meeting that just happened. But I do have a question. What is the strategy to win? This week, legacy civil rights organizations met with President Biden and Vice President Harris to discuss voting rights. Now, on the one hand, we love to see it. On the other hand, why y'all ain't had some of the organizations who mobilized millions of Black voters at the table as well? Lady has it on good authority that not only were groups like Black Voters Matter not invited to the meeting, but then they got like a day before invitation to Vice President Harris's big speech on voting rights, which really amounted to a push to get people to vote as opposed to a push to protect people's right to vote. Now, what kind of monkey ass shit is that? Lady asked two critical questions here. One, Black voters delivered power to the Democratic Party. Is there going to come a point when Democrats get serious about actually using that power while they have it or nah? And two, on the movement side of the house, to get better, we got to do better. I believe in lanes and I believe in division of labor, but I also believe in coalitions and united fronts. And one of our biggest challenges as a movement is that we haven't learned to let go of the thrill of being at the head of the table. I don't know about y'all, but I prefer being a queen maker, which basically means we're much more powerful if we're setting the menu than we are sitting at the damn table. It's an error to say things like, well, we're going to engage millennial groups later. Nah, son. Millennial groups are who provided the space for y'all to be sitting at that table in the sense that millennials created the current political conditions for these conversations to even be pressing for this administration to have. And frankly, having these groups at the table would bring some pressure that they don't really feel right now, even with y'all sitting at the table with them. So with all due respect and so much love, y'all, we gotta do it differently this time. And that shit was not it. Other things we ain't gonna do this week is close our eyes to the impacts and effects of colonial interventions. Now, this week, the president of Haiti was murdered, reportedly by assassins from Colombia, alongside two Americans who say they were hired as translators for the job. His wife was also badly injured, but is said to be out of the woods now. Now, I need a little bit more time to get somebody to break this all down for me because Haiti has a long, rich political history. But what I can say about this is that it don't smell right. And at the end of the day, superpowers like the United States and France have been working overtime to destabilize this nation for decades in the interests of pursuing its own interests and installing friendly governments there. Lady needs to do more research on the topic, but rest assured we are going to be back next week with some more news you can use about what is happening in Haiti and why. Now, here's what we want more of this week, though. Number one, and the only thing that made the list this week, is Black women naming and claiming their worth. Now, Hannah Nicole Jones, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and curator of the 1619 Project, was finally offered tenure by the University of North Carolina, which had previously declined to give her that tenure because of some old white man donor who was scared about how much truth Sis was telling. But get this, she turned the offer down, and then she went to Howard University, got her a tenure position, and then went on and started a school for journalism with Ta-Nehisi Coates. Okay, now let me tell you how much of a boss-ass move that whole thing was. First of all, she persisted, and she secured the bag. Not just the money, honey, but the win. Second of all, she knew her worth. Now, I want to be clear. She's a boss, but she's not a superhero. Trust me, she actually accepted the job offer first, and then she turned it down. Now, I don't want anybody to have the impression here that it's all simple. It's not simple. It's a struggle to stand up for what you believe in and to not take less than what you're worth. So I think the lesson here isn't to try to be some unattainable standard of boss bitchery. The lesson here is that there's a boss inside of all of us, and it's waiting to be loved and claimed and seen. Senator, how can people reach you on the socials if they want to follow you and follow the incredible work that you are doing on our behalf?
Oh, that's fabulous. They can just follow Elizabeth Warren. They can follow us on Twitter. They can follow us on Facebook. You can go to @, and it's all one word, Sen Warren, S-E-N, not S-I-N, okay? S-E-N like Senator, S-E-N-W-A-R-R-E-N, @ Sen Warren. Come join us. We're going to have fun.
That's right. I love it. Thank you, Senator. I know your time is Take limited, care. And I love you so much. This
love
was an excellent
too.
Episode. Can't wait to put it out, and I will be back in touch with you about these plans.
We'll do it
Let's
again.
Go.
Let's do it.
All right. That's it for Lady Don't Take No, but I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where there's a chance that you might be commuting again. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're @ Lady Take. On Insta, we're @ Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook @ Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things you hear on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And let's give a special shout out to Jahari Farrar for making sure the people get what they need from the socials. We appreciate you, sis. And thank you, Phil, for picking up the slack while Jahari is on a much needed vacation. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, name it and claim it for the boss inside of you. That's right, I said it, because Lady Don't Take No.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a woman ish. She won't speak less of something worse, saying don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. Got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yeah, the luxury.
Love y'all.